The recordings have started.
Okay, great. Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the review of All Rights Protection Mechanisms, RPMs, and all GTLD PDP Working Group call on the 6th of December, 2017. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you're only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? And I do have Kathy Kleinman noted.
This is Steve Levy. I'm audio only today.
Thank you, Steve. I'll make a note. All right. Hearing no more names, I'd like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. And please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. And with this, I'll turn it back over to Phil Corwin. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Sorry for the technical difficulties. I understand my phone is much clearer now, so that's good. Hopefully my thoughts will be clear as well. I don't think there are any changes in statements of interest. We did the roll call. So let's get into this. And in terms of outlining how we're going to proceed on URS, the co-chairs had a lengthy call with staff the end of last week. We're going to look toward a presentation from attorneys who have actually engaged in URS practice on our call of December 13th, 1 week from today. We've invited and I believe confirmed that Doug Eisenberg will be joining as a complainant's representative. We've got a request into John Berryhill to represent the respondent's point of view, and this is not to discuss cases they've been involved with, although if there's something that illuminates the application of the rules and procedures, but it's really to reacquaint all the members of the working group with the rules that are outlined for how a URS case is brought, what can be in the complaint, the time limits, the limits on words in the complaint and the reply. All of that, so we're all come from a, and I see that Mary Wong has just put in the chat room that John Berryhill has confirmed he'll be available and will attend. So that should be a very interesting and informative presentation to get everybody, even those of us who participated in shaping the URS back when the applicant guidebook was being put together. That was years ago, and if you're not involved with this type of practice on a regular basis, you've probably forgotten some of the details. So, aside from Claudio, how about someone from NAF? I believe, and staff can affirm that we're also putting out invitations to the three providers to, I don't know if it would be simultaneous with the presentation by Doug and John, but also chime in on the technical operation administration of the URS from their perspective. So, I believe staff will confirm, but I know we talked about it. And Jeff, I see your question. I just explained the goal of the call is to reacquaint the entire working group with the details of the rules of the URS procedure so that we will have that knowledge base when we start considering the charter questions. And Jay Scott has put in that we'd have the providers comment at a later date. I believe that's correct, but we are contemplating that not on next week's call, but on a later call. So after that, we will... Jeff Newman. No, I had stated before, we're not looking for them to discuss the policy aspects that have come up in various cases. This is about what the rules are for bringing and defending a URS and to reacquaint the entire working group with that. And of course, whether they, Jay Scott has added, whether they've encountered problems with those rules, which we should certainly know about, but it's not to discuss the specifics of any particular case or decision in any case. So after that session next week, in fact, depending on how long that takes, possibly later on in next week's session, we'll get back to considering the URS charter questions and how they should be consolidated, made more neutral, what additional questions might be raised to that are relevant to our charge under the charter, and then proceed to doing that and identifying the data needs. And it's this co-chair's belief that the URS will not require any outside assistance in gathering data the way that trademark claims and Sunrise registrations did. So we don't anticipate that type of request or potential delay from such a request in dealing with URS. So I'm going to stop there and see if there's any questions about the process going forward on URS charter questions and the meeting next week. I should add that after the meeting of the 13th, we'll have a meeting on the 20th to get further into URS charter questions. There will be no meeting on the 27th. That's the week between Christmas and New Year's, and then we'll start back up again on the Wednesday after New Year's Day. So let me stop there, and I see Brian Beckham has his hand up, followed by George Kiriko. So, Brian, please go ahead.
Thanks, Phil. This is Brian. I think I understand, but I wonder if you may be able to just confirm this understanding, where we are on the different documents that have been circulated on the email list with regard to the URS recently. As I understand, there was a letter from the co-chairs as well as some documents prepared by staff that were meant to, in the letter from co-chairs, to feed into the charter questions, and the documents from staff help us sort of categorize the charter questions. So I guess my question for you is that correct? And if so, I frankly have had trouble understanding which document I'm supposed to be looking at, which is the current version that we should be providing comments on in terms of refining the charter questions themselves when there are a number of documents floating around. Thanks.
Okay, I'll answer that as best I can, Brian. I invite input from the other co-chairs or the staff on this, because my word is not absolute on this, but and I don't recall exactly which documents have been distributed. I know there's a master document with the URS charter questions, both the specific ones and the general ones, and then there was further analysis and commentary in that document. It was a four-column document. You are correct. The co-chair sent out a letter a week or two ago with our suggestion, certainly are not our mandate, and it's up for working group discussion, that suggesting that a number of the quite general charter questions should be refined into a specific review of the administration of the URS to make sure that that the URS reviewing is actually the one that was set forth in the rules in the applicant guidebook and the subsequent procedures put out by ICANN, as well as the provisions of the MOU that ICANN has entered into with all three of the providers. This would be just like we checked that the trademark clearinghouse we were reviewing was, in fact, consistent with the rules that have been set out for the trademark clearinghouse, and that was a proposal which, again, we thought would take a lot of the general questions that are in the charter and really take a much more specific and focused approach to answering them. I'm going to ask staff whether there's any other documents other than those two floating around. Mary, go ahead.
Hi, Phil and everyone. This is Mary from staff. And So in terms of the documentation, you may have mentioned this already, but as you said, we started off with the overall set of charter questions, and there was a fairly detailed table. Then subsequent to that, the co-chair sent out a statement that had some additional considerations and questions. And after the last call on the 30th of November, the approach that had been suggested there was to take the questions from the first document and to extract from them a set of topics or a list of topics, to which for each topic a set of uniform high-level questions could be applied. So to the extent the question is there another document, this last piece would be the other document that was built based on the set of charter questions and the discussion on the last working group call.
Okay. And Mary, I see Claudio has a question about whether these papers and memos can be combined into one single document so everyone's on the same page as to what they should be reviewing and commenting on. Perhaps staff can just consolidate them, and then we're all they all relate to one another, but they're all different documents, and I think working group members should feel free to comment or on any of them, or at least be prepared to discuss all of them when we get into the charter questions again, either late in next week's call or in the following final call for December.
Phil, this is Mary. If I may follow up on that.
Yes, please do.
So in answer to Claudio's question and a follow-up on what you just said, in terms of that third document that I mentioned, the list of topics with the accompanying list of high-level questions, when we sent that out, we actually had a supplementary document that cross-references the topics with the actual charter questions. So to that extent, we think we have consolidated the original charter questions as well as where they came from with the new list of high-level questions and topics. What we haven't done is extracted or consolidated anything from the co-chair statement, because that was sent out at a time when we were still discussing the charter questions. So we would be we are awaiting guidance from the working group as to whether we should apply the same approach to the topics and questions the co-chairs have suggested, or hold off until the group has had a chance to review them.
Okay, so Mary, you're saying that the document that staff sent out really combines the original document with the supplementary topic classifications. Is that correct?
Yes, we believe so. Thanks, Phil.
Okay. Then I would urge working group members to work off the last document by staff and keep the co-chair suggestions in mind on a specific approach for reviewing the administration of the URS as a way to refine and focus some of the general charter questions, but just keep it in mind for when we get to those questions, and we can then discuss it further. George Kirikos, go ahead.
George Kirikos for the transcript. In terms of our work plan, we might want to make certain adjustments because there's that general data protection regulation in the EU that's going into effect in less than 6 months. I posted about this on the mailing list yesterday. There's some sections of the URS and or UDRP that are going to break because of the missing WHOIS data, and so we might need to make changes before a final report is issued on the URS and UDRP, because you know, that might be 2 or 3 years from now, in order to accommodate those regulations. I think most of ICANN is focused on the WHOIS, but there's obviously going to be knock-on effects on other policies, including the UDRP and the URS. Even today, there was an article on Circle ID, which I just posted to the chat room, which talks about how it might lead to an increase in John Doe types of lawsuits. And the whole purpose of the URS and the UDRP were to reduce the impact on the courts. And so if we don't make those adjustments before that deadline, then there'll be those unintended consequences by failing to act. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, George. That's certainly an important topic, but there's other groups that I can, looking at that, I don't believe that we can just issue some interim recommendations on change in URS, much less the RPM review. Well, this working group posting suggestions for changing that for the UDRP as well, I'm not sure how ICANN would adjust the relevant provisions, but I'm not sure. We may need to add this to consideration for the group before we issue an initial or final report, but I'm not sure we can take any action before the May implementation of GDPR. Mary, I see your hand up, and then I'll get to Jay Scott, who's been waiting.
Yes, thanks, Phil, and thanks, George, for the question. This is something that the staff has been kind of thinking about how to handle, and while it would be within scope for this group to look at the specifics in respect of UDRP and URS, I guess that's a question of when it would be appropriate to do so as part of the review, and I see that I think Jeff and others have put comments in the chat. But in terms of a sort of more broader approach, because there actually are likely to be other GNSO consensus policies that could be impacted by GDPR, one that comes to mind is the inter-registrant transfer policy, for example. I mean, I'm just saying they could because we haven't actually gone in and taken a look. But what we as the staff supporting the GNSO overall plan to suggest to the GNSO Council is that this be something that the Council, as the manager of all the PDPs and therefore as the guardian of all the consensus policies, actually consider this question and perhaps give some guidance both to the staff as well as to the community on this.
Okay, thanks for that additional input, Mary. yeah, GDPR is obviously a very important topic that's going to has the potential to create issues for a lot of ICANN policies and processes. Why don't we just make a note that we may want to address it in our work on both the URS and then subsequently the UDRP, but it's such a fluid situation right now. Let's see how things develop within the ICANN community over the next month or two as the registries and registrars and other concerned parties engage with ICANN and try to figure out some interim workarounds at a minimum. So, Jay Scott, you've been very patient. Let me call on you.
Sure. Thanks, Phil. This is Jay Scott Evans for the record. I just want to jump back to the agenda and to Brian Beckham's question. The idea of having sort of a break next week to re-advise everyone of what's going on and what the policy is and to hear some frustrations of practical realities from practitioners is also to give the working group additional time. The document that Mary spoke of that circulated was actually a summary of the call from last week in which we had a suggestion and a discussion and a consensus on that call, but because of the timing of the call, it was it wasn't as well attended as most of our calls, so the idea was to give the broader working group more opportunity to review. So the threshold question we need to think about for the 21st is, or the 20th, I think, is whether we want to look at the URS and proceed with the charter questions in a bit different method than we have proceeded in the past. And that is to suss or tease out from the questions that were presented and gathered throughout the ICANN community and put into our charter, what the issues are, where they fall around, and then to apply some data-driven, data-seeking questions, identical questions to each of those provisions. And so that would be the first question. If that thought is that that's how we should proceed, then there is no need to drill down and take extensive comments on the chart that I think you've mentioned in several emails that you have extensive and copious notes and comments with regards to the wording of the particular charter questions and how they should be asked and or refined. there would be no need to do that. So that document doesn't need to be used for that purpose. What that document would then be used, and it looks like we may have a combined document now, is to ensure that we've sussed out the necessary topics for consideration that we would apply the templatized questions to. So that's the first consideration that we need to decide is threshold question, is this how we want to proceed? It's different than we've done in the past. But Heather Combs, who suggested it, and the rest of the group who was on the call last week felt like if we did something like that, it would be less onerous because we wouldn't need to argue over the wording of each and every question. We would be asking some data-driven questions, I think, that are set out. And those are not set in stone. So that would be one. One document, one consideration that needs to be made. If the group feels that is not the way to proceed, then we would go to that original table and begin the process of working through like we have for everyone. So that's a threshold question that we need to decide. Once we've decided that question, it seems, then a proper consideration would be whether the chair suggestion of the topics that have been identified in the memo should be also added in to the topics that are considered by the group, and perhaps these templatized questions also apply to it. So that's sort of how I see the workflow going over the next few weeks. Is we, you know, once we get a threshold decision, but we wanted to give the group time to really consider what is being asked because it's a bit different than we've done before, and. You know, everyone on the call last week felt like it was a good approach, but we wanted to give the wider group an opportunity to consider it and to give you additional time to consider it because it is different. So with that, I will turn the floor back over to Phil. I think there are some other hands.
Yeah, and thank you so much, Jay Scott. That was a very helpful background explanation and really fleshes out the purpose of the call on the 20th, which is really to discuss taking a somewhat different approach on the URS charter questions than we have on some of the previous issues we've dealt with. I should also note that the co-chairs discussed whether to have that final December call at the APAC time, which would usually be the last week of the month, and I think we wound up saying we'd keep the regular time because it is a very important discussion and not to discriminate against APAC located members, but we have noticed a significant drop-off in attendance on those calls, particularly from European participants, but also from those on the East Coast of the U.S., so we'll get back to regular scheduling in January on the APAC rotation. Susan, you've had your hand up. Please go ahead.
And Phil, this is Kathy. I'm in the queue as well. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Kathy.
Yeah, thanks. Hi, it's Susan Payne. I just wanted to say thanks to Jay Scott for that clarification, really, because I think what Brian Beckham was alluding to, and certainly it's something that I had a problem with, was understanding that that was what was being suggested and trying to determine how we were supposed to be reading the full document with the charter questions in you know, in reference to that kind of straw person proposal. So it is really helpful to have that clarification. From an entirely personal perspective, I'm reasonably happy with taking that approach. I think my only concern would be that obviously we've identified on a number of occasions that a lot of the charter questions are quite are drafted quite non-neutrally and sort of a kind of presumptive of an outcome. And obviously those charter questions will still be existing and we'll still be having them in mind when we're going through our work. And so I think we would need to all acknowledge, and it would probably be helpful to note it in the document, that when we are reading those documents, we need to be doing so through the lens of neutrality, if you like. So we don't necessarily need to go to the task of redrafting, but we need to be recognizing that those charter questions are not neutral, and we need to be applying neutrality to them in our own minds.
Yeah, thank you, Susan, for that input. I would generally agree. But again, and we now have that document up on the screen, and this is the document that, in particular, working group members should focus on in preparation for the December 20th call, and perhaps some initial discussion on the call the latter part of next week. But of course, you can refer back to the charter questions, but we may create our own questions to address these issues as we go, if we adopt this approach. I'm going to call on Kathy, and then I see Brian has his hand up again. But Kathy, go ahead.
Terrific. Thank you. Kathy Kleinman, audio only. So I originally got in the queue to provide some of the same background that Jay Scott did, that that for people who didn't recognize what we were talking about, it had come in the late-night Asia-Friendly meeting. And I agree that there was a consensus towards exploring kind of a new way to do things. I think there was some pause of some people trying to figure out, and as a working group we'll try to figure out, do these new phrasings of the questions cover all the issues? Do they cover the concerns? Do, you know, do they hit kind of the key issues we should be looking at? Mike Claudio, I had some questions about the document that was circulated. Phil, I'd like to recommend, you know, with my co-chair's hat off, that we recirculate, that we ask staff in one email to recirculate the new questions, the original charter table that was created that we were looking at before the Asia-Friendly meeting, and the co-chair's questions as well, so that we have everything in a single document with a little bit of background for anybody who's not on the call, you know, for the many people, the many members who are not on the call and the many observers, to kind of fill them in with what we learned today and what we learned in our last meeting. And then we'll have all the documents in one place to kind of consider the big question that we're being asked, which is kind of, you know, a sea shift in looking at the questions. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Kathy. And I think that's a reasonable request for staff. They would just be taking the three separate documents and combining them into one Word document. I would suggest when they do that, that they start with that the first document in order should be the one before us right now, that the general topics, followed by the charter questions, and then followed by the co-chair's letter, which is simply our suggestions for how to refine and focus certain of the charter questions relating to administration of the URS. Brian, I see your hand up.
Yeah, thanks, Phil. I just wanted to add support for Susan's comment, but just to give a specific example of why I'm not sure that we, in using this new approach, which is fine if that's what the group wants to do, of course, but I'm not sure that using that approach means that we shouldn't also look at refining the charter questions. One specific example that comes to mind, never mind the question of whether the questions presuppose an answer or have some element of a perceived bias in them. But if I remember correctly, there was a question about appeals, and there was a question about costs, and with respect to those questions, it wasn't entirely clear. There were different readings that you could take from those questions. So I think even if we use this approach of the document that's on the screen now, it's probably still worth looking at the charter questions themselves to make sure that they're in the form we want them to be when we go ahead. Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely, Brian. And, I agree. In my own personal review of the questions, I saw many questions that were ambiguous as to what they were getting at. I saw other questions that seemed to be based on certain assumptions that may or may not be true, and then other questions which were very general and should be made more specific. So those questions, I think, if we take this issues approach, are a resource for framing the way we want to approach the issues. And further commenting, I see Christine Durain asked whether the working group will get to discuss the co-chair's suggestions for refinement before incorporating. Absolutely. They were put out for the purpose of sparking working group discussion. So they're not a dictate from the co-chairs. Jay Scott, see your hand up.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that that we're being clear here. Brian's comments about the charter questions makes me concerned that people aren't, that we're not being clear. So the concept of this new approach that is before you, should it be adopted, would be that the only purpose of the questions that were assimilated into the charter from various sources within the ICANN community would be used to identify topics and concerns. Okay? There's no neutral. Like, is there a concern about appeals? Is it about the timing of the appeals? Is it about the cost of appeals? That kind of thing. We get these topics. And then we ask these four or five data seeking questions against those topics. So the fact that one say, is a fails, are a charter, one of the questions in the charter might be, and I'm using this merely as a hyperbole and an example, is the charter fair to people who only have a broken email? You know, is the URS notification procedures fair to people that may have a broken email? It seems like it's asking for a conclusion, which is the answer is no, right? So that would, in the normal course of things, that is a very loaded question. It seems to direct you towards a question. We spent a lot of time trying to neutralize that question into a point where it was seeking objective information and wasn't seeking a predefined conclusion. So the thought from Heather, who was the main proponent of this idea, was trying to do that takes a lot of time with all the various forces and the various opinions and different perspectives that we have on this working group. Wouldn't it be, she proposes, simpler if we just said, it seems that the appeal notification process is a thing. So you put down appeal notification as a sussed out topic that the charter question identified, and then you ask, has the notification process been used? What was the original purpose of it? So you would apply those questions. So you wouldn't need to go through the exercise of objectifying or making objective all the charter questions, because all you're using those questions for is to suss out general topics that then you're going to apply these things for. So that's the purpose. If we decide to go this method, and that is not a conclusion that has been decided by this working group, but should that be the outcome, as I see it from my personal perspective, we wouldn't spend time going through each charter question and trying to make sure that the wording was fair and reasonable and objective and not seeking a conclusion. We would just use those questions to look over this document and make sure that we've covered all the big topics that we need to cover. So that sort of approach, it's a different, very, very different approach than we've used before. And the thought that Heather had, and she comes at things as from an academic perspective, was that it takes a lot of the emotion and battle over wordsmithing out of it and focuses on data collection with regards to the topic, on agreed upon questions that seek objective data, and that we would ask the same questions, the same set of questions over each specific identified point. So that's sort of the perspective, and it's very different, and I understand it's different. That's the reason we're giving everybody more time to think about it, but it is provocative, and it does at least theoretically seem to offer us an opportunity to back out of a lot of the negotiation and focus on data collection and analyzing data to formulate proposed recommended solutions for our report. So I just want to be clear that we wouldn't go through this whole process, ask these templatized questions, and then have sessions and sessions and sessions where we're trying to make the questions more neutral, because the charter questions are merely used as a roadmap, not as a specific questions, to identify issues. And then we would apply these five questions, or more if the group feels, or less if the group feels that that's appropriate to each of those topics. So I just want to sort of, it's a different way of going about it. It's a different way of thinking. But I did think, I was the chair of the call the week before, that it deserved a broader and more socialization within the entire working group, because I think that it does some things well. It doesn't get into renegotiating, as Jeff Newman has said on several times, long fought battles. It asks a question. Okay, this was a compromise position on X. Is it working the way it was designed to? You know, those questions, not whether it should exist, whether it shouldn't exist, those types of more fundamental questions that sort of dig down to about seven, eight years ago. So I just want to make sure that we understand what the process is, and if they're, so that we're really clear on what we're asking next week, I mean, not week after next, about this call. That's the reason it's very important to look at this, because this is, it doesn't mean if this approach is acceptable to you, that these are the topics we have to consider, that these are the identical questions. But if that's the approach, then we would work on sort of refining this to make sure the questions and the topics and all that's okay, and then we would go to asking the questions. So just, so I probably rambled on a lot longer than I should have, but I wanted to just let you know when I heard you talk about the original charter questions, because that would not figure in to anything other than helping us refine the document before you.
J. Scott, could I ask a quick follow-up question? It's Brian.
Sure.
I think I followed you until the very end, in which in where you said where we come back to the questions, and you, I think you mean the charter questions. So, sorry if I'm missing something obvious. I just want to be clear that the idea was that I up until the very last I thought we would be kind of overtaking the charter questions, but then I wondered if you were saying we would. Once we gathered some data, we would come back to those. Is that right?
Not as I see it. What I see is, what I meant was, if this approach is adopted, then the whole working group needs to consider the charter questions that have been considered and this document, and see if it has taken those charter questions and looked at them and come up with the right topics for consideration. Right? That's what those would be used. One group has already done that, a small subset of this group, but it has to be for the whole group, and it needs to be considered by everyone. So, you know, this is a draft. It is not a final presentation. The approach is one thing, and then once we decide on the approach, then we have to look at the document that supports the approach to make sure that the charter questions that were presented in our charter, we've sussed or, you know, teased out from it the necessary topics, and we get consensus on that. And then we get a consensus that these are the right templatized questions to ask. And then we just move forward. And I think the way we would handle it is, in our report, we would just explain our methodology.
Okay. I think we've probably exhausted the topic of the reason for this suggested approach, and we can get back into discussing the details when we actually get into it after that review of the presentation by URS complainant and respondent counsel next week. So I don't see any other hands up, and I think that we're 45 minutes into this. Does anyone else have anything else they want to say before we get to Item 3 on the agenda, which is the status update on the data request that's gone into ICANN and a quick report from the data sub-team on where they stand? Okay, so I think, Mary, probably hand this over to you on where we stand with the data survey request that's gone into ICANN, which is item 3.
Hi, Phil. This is Mary from staff. I think the Christine Dorain from the sub-team is happy to do the update from the sub-team, and then staff can come in with an update on the procurement process, if that order works for you.
Works fine. Okay. Go ahead, Christine.
Thanks, Mary, and thanks, Phil. This is Christine Doreen for the transcript. I hope you can hear me. I am on my mobile device today. We have taken a couple of meetings to make sure that we get organized and that we have all of the information presented in a logical format, and now we are starting to move relatively briskly through the work. So the table in the Adobe Connect room before you is the current draft of the table we've been working from. And you'll notice, and I think this is one of the great features of this table, is that it really takes our questions from the sort of really sort of esoteric top level down to the level of granular detail that we think we can get. So, excuse me, before I begin, I wanted to say what we're not doing is drafting the actual questions that will be going to the survey respondents. What we are doing is drafting enough questions and question types so that we can really convey to the survey provider what we're trying to get at and what sorts of questions might lead to getting at that information. We will be recommending that I can rely on the expertise of the actual survey provider in drafting the survey questions. Secondly, we're trying to be extremely mindful of the lessons that Inta learned from their survey. Lori has been a very active and just fantastic participant on our team in helping keep us, you know, shepherded and reminded that we can't ask extremely long, convoluted questions that are going to slow people down and provide barriers to participation. So while you're going to see a lot of questions, specifically questions asking for a lot of anecdotal information, the point is to just sort of give the survey provider a data dump and allow them to glean and extract what they can from it to make really deep, meaningful questions from what we are we're reviewing. So we've done the first section. The first section relates to questions directed to registry operators. What we did is we had taken all of the questions that both the claims subteam and the Sunrise subteam have drafted, the revised charter questions, and we had sort of designated which questions should go to which sort of constituency, if you will. So registries, registrars, brand owners, registrants, you know, people who are, we're even calling potential registrants, people who might have wanted to participate and couldn't. And that's, again, on our wish list of people we'd like to reach out to. Then those questions were sorted by each recipient. And in some cases, questions were sent to all the recipients. In some cases, questions are only for a specific recipient type. So as you go through this table, you'll see, you know, the relevant charter questions in column two may be repeated multiple times because we want to get at that same question, that same charter question, by asking multiple types of respondents or multiple types of people. So we talked about the purpose and scope. That's our first column. I'm not going to go through this as I'm just giving an update, but I'm trying to explain to you sort of the purpose of this chart and how it's functioning, and I'm happy to take questions. The purpose and scope is the information that we provided to the GNSO Council, and this is the information that they used to make their decision on whether or not we should even be allowed to have a survey. The charter questions are, of course, our revised charter questions sorted by, you know, type of person getting the question. And then many of them do ask for anecdotal evidence, so you'll see the anecdote questions is next. It's the next column, the third column. And we are asking as many anecdotal questions as we can to help direct the survey provider. But the thing we're really trying to focus on is how can we turn those into actual data-driven questions? Because anecdotes are fabulous, but they're not data. And so we're trying really hard to think about ways that we can answer sort of yes or no questions or questions that have numbers that we can have access to or we can get. But the anecdotal questions also allow users to kind of provide some user stories so that if they can't get information or if it's confidential business information, we can still get some feedback on the questions that we have. As I mentioned, we essentially finished, and I'm going to say finished with sort of a dotted line, on the entire section for registry operators. We may revisit, you know, as we go through, there may be things that have to go back up in there or that we learn later that we can go back up and take a look. But essentially, we've closed out the registry operator section, and on Friday, we will be starting to talk about the survey that will be directed to the registrars. So we're starting with the contracted parties and working our way through. We've split up the work. Each one of us has taken a section and suggested questions that we think could be useful. And so we're going through sort of question by question and, you know, seeing if we need to add any clarification or get any more information or even help each other out. What additional data do we think we can get? We're also taking it in turns to rotate as the chair. So the reason I'm giving this week's update is because I chaired last week and I wrote the questions for registry operators. And then I believe Susan Payne will chair on Friday and we'll handle the question on registrars. So we're not necessarily taking the questions in order. And so if Susan's unavailable and she may be unavailable, then we'll just skip ahead to the next section. That might be a little bit more detail than you were looking for, but I'm happy to take questions about our work or our methodology at this point. Thanks. Well, hearing nothing, I guess we'll just carry on. I think this doc is available to scroll through. Feel free to email, you know, me or Susan or Kurt or Michael Graham, Lori, Kieran, anyone on the working group, and we're happy to, you know, take your comments into the discussion as well. Thank you.
Have we lost Phil? Hello?
Sorry, your chair forgot to take himself off mute. I was thanking Christine and then inviting Mary to give us an update on where things stand in the procurement process for securing the funds and then selecting a provider to undertake the data surveys for trademark claims and Sunrise registrations that require outside assistance.
Thanks, Phil. Hi, everybody. This is Mary from staff again. So staff walked through the procurement process with the coaches on our last prep call. So we're just going to give an update to you all, particularly in respect of where the group can be helpful as we prepare to issue the request for proposal RFP and also the timeline. So generally speaking, I think a lot of folks on this call will have had experience with doing RFPs and similar types of exercises. So while each organization does have its own processes and rules, and ICANN is obviously no exception to that. So since October, I would say, the internal team, that is Julie, Ariel, myself, and Barry, have been working with our procurement department to understand the process, the different steps, and what perhaps is most important to this group, the timeline and the documents that are required. So we have formed an internal team with our procurement colleagues, as well as consulted with those of our colleagues who have worked with other community groups to do surveys in particular. So, for example, the CCT review team, some of our GDD projects, and they have been extremely helpful in terms of providing guidance on, roughly how long it's going to take and, you know, what sort of guidance vendors usually look for, et cetera, et cetera. So the long and the short of it is that we're continuing to work on each step in the process, which my colleague Ariel will take you through. We are drafting RFP documents, and where the sub-team work that Christine just talked about, and in particular the document that was just shown on the screen, we believe will be very helpful in scoping the RFP as well as providing the vendors with very specific guidance as to exactly what we're looking for in their response, and also when the vendor is selected by ICANN, to be able to pretty much jump in right away. The other thing that I'll add for now is that where the working group, as well as, of course, the sub-team can also be helpful is that it is possible for us to do a directed RFP in the sense that we are able, under our guidelines, to approach a few potential respondents to the RFP. And it's been suggested by a few people in this group, too, that we look to vendors who have not just worked with ICANN before, but who have done either similar surveys or are familiar with the rights protection type of work, either because of the CCT review or the TMCH review, et cetera. So at the appropriate time, we'll be coming back to the subteam and the working group to ask, who do you think, either you know or that it has worked with ICANN before, would be a good candidate for us to approach to see if they're interested in responding? That will be helpful in terms not just of expertise, but also in terms of hopefully abbreviating our timeline. So that's where we are in terms of the steps in the procurement process. And what I'm going to do now, unless anyone has questions about what I've just summarized, if not, what I'll do now is hand over to Ariel, who will talk about the timeline that we have developed to bring us through all these steps. And what I do want to say at the moment, as she's putting up the slides here, these are slides that have been seen by the co-chairs. This is a, what I would say is a comfortable timeline in the sense that we have tried to do it as a sort of outside, you know, maximal timeline. And of course, the hope is that we are going to be able to complete each step sooner than we have in the date. So please bear that caveat in mind as you look at this and as we go through the process, that this is merely a guide, it's hopefully an outside guide. And if we can get the RFP out, if we can get interested vendors quickly, then obviously we hope to complete it well within this timeline. Ariel, do you want to go ahead?
Thanks very much, Mary. This is Ariel from staff. So, as Mary mentioned, I just put the slides in the Adobe Connect chat, and if you look at the slide number 2, the one with all these flags that showcase all the milestones we need to reach in this RFP process. So if you look at the second flag, which is the stage we're in now, is the RFP preparation period. We estimated the time from now till January, and then this is the period we're gathering all the necessary required documents and doing vendor research in consultation with the community and other important items for the preparation for the RFP. And then we estimated, based on our knowledge of the process and advice from procurement team and other colleagues, in early February we can launch the RFP, but that's a comfortable estimate. We're hoping we can do that earlier. And then once that's go live, that will be the evaluation period, and we will review the bids from the vendors and doing the scoring and reference checks and other internal procedure. And then in mid-April, that's we estimated we'll start a contracting process with the selected vendor. And then mid-May, we'll kick off the implementation when vendor can work with the community to transform these questions into survey forms. And then from May to June, that will be the time to conduct the surveys. And in July, that will be preliminary findings will be available to the community. So also another thing we want to keep in mind is there will be two ICANN meetings during this RFP period. One is after the RFP goes live, and then before we start the evaluation is ICANN 61. And then ICANN 62 is estimated in between when the surveys are being conducted and before the preliminary findings are available. So that's a quick overview of the process. And if you look at slide number 1, that provides a flavor of dates that you can reference to. So and I want to restate the important caveat that this is based on estimation and does not represent our actual commitment, and we're really much hoping we can do these process earlier than we estimated dates, but we'll make sure to keep the community informed of changes. So, and Mary has her hand raised, so Mary, please go ahead.
Thanks for that, Ariel, and thanks for the slides. We can, we've confirmed with our procurement colleagues that what we have on these slides are accurate representations of the steps that are required as part of ICANN's process, and we will circulate these to the working group after the call today. I did raise my hand to emphasize the fact that obviously this timeline can and probably will change, and also to note some of Jeff's questions in the chat that I thought perhaps to put on the record for those who may read the transcript or listen to the recording afterwards who are not on the call. First of all, this proposed timeline, even as an outside timeline, will, in our view, impact the timeline for completion of phase one of this PDP. And as I said in the chat, staff does have an action item, following what we've agreed to be the approach for the next few calls, to prepare an updated timeline for phase one, which we haven't really looked at as a group since before Abu Dhabi. Jeff has asked if we can estimate what that would look like, and from the staff perspective, we've been trying to work through these steps. We think that you're probably looking at the end of 2018, something like that, possibly a little later, again, working on an outside timeline. And that is based on, in answer to Jeff's other question, that the vendor will be asked merely to design the survey and propose the questions, which, of course, will be vetted by the group. And we hope that that vetting process will go quite quickly. Our assumption is that with the sub-team with us and Darth Vader. sorry, apologies for that. I just slipped out. With the sub-team working with us, we will actually have good guidance for the vendor so that when the vendor comes back to the group with the questions, that process will go quickly. So that's the estimate right now, Jeff and everybody, that you're probably looking more at the end of this year as the overall timeline built into this. Does anyone else have any other questions? And Jeff, I see your comment is that we would need to incorporate the findings with the working group discussions with the preliminary report, then the public comment period. That's absolutely right, and that's why I said, you're probably looking at end 2018, possibly even early into 2019, because we have accounted, at least in our sort of back of the envelope calculations so far, with the fact that the council has directed that this group must have a phase one report, and of course that report has to go into public comment. So we would say that that part at the end of it, when we actually complete a phase one report and send it to the council, even accounting for public comment period, will depend on how much public comments we receive and how long this group takes to review them and incorporate them into recommendations.
Okay, thank you, Mary. Phil here. I would just add three comments. One, when the co-chairs reviewed this timeline last Friday, I'm looking for the right word. We had hoped that the timeline would be somewhat shorter than this, that we would be getting survey results back by mid-spring, and we're going to continue to work with staff to, if there's any change in this timeline, to shorten it and not to see any further extensions of it. And so we're going to be putting the pressure on to see what can be done to shorten this by at least a month or two if we could get results in May or early June rather than July. It would all be better. Second, this means that we're going to be waiting a while to get the data survey results back, which means we have ample time for a comprehensive and objective review of the URS, which is probably a good thing because we're not just going to be looking at potential modifications of the URS one way or another, but the overarching question of whether it should become consensus policy. So our answer on that big question will be fully informed. And finally, depending on when we complete the URS work and where that, what, when that happens and how much longer we have to wait for the survey results to come back, rather than simply suspend operations of the working group and waiting on that, we may decide and discuss with the working group beginning consolidation of the UDRP Phase 2 questions so that at least we're doing something that shortens our overall project time for Phase 1 and 2 while we're waiting for the survey data to come back. So let me stop there and see if there's any comments or questions about any of this. Okay, I don't see anyone. The one other thing I would add is that in terms of overall timeline and coordination with the subsequent procedures working group, Jeff, we discussed last Friday, and we'll be reaching out to schedule a call sometime in January to discuss the interplay between our working groups. So that was a topic that was also discussed by the co-chairs last Friday. So I'll stop there, and we're at 7 minutes past the hour. We've completed our agenda here, unless there's further comments or questions. And I see one from Susan Payne. I'll get right to her. And I'll just say we've already discussed that our next meeting is at our regular time next week and will be the presentation from Complainant and Respondent Council describing their experience with the procedural aspects of the URS. Susan, go ahead.
Thanks, Phil. And apologies if this got covered at the beginning, but I had lots of audio issues, so I missed probably the audio for about the first 6 or so minutes of the call. But I'm just wondering about the RPM Working Group co-chair's joint statement that was put out. I'd kind of assumed that item 2 on the agenda would include a discussion on that. But have I missed a discussion on that, or did you talk about a timing on when we will do so that I missed?
Susan, we talked about consolidating that with the two other documents that staff has put out, and what we said was that that specific suggestion as a suggestion for refining and focusing certain of the charter questions relating to administration of the URS would be discussed at the time we get to those questions, either through the issue approach or the question review approach. So we're not trying to foist that as a fait accompli at the group, on the group. We're trying to put that as a suggestion for taking some of the charter questions and the issues they address and focusing them on actual data and objective analysis rather than general questions. So we didn't think it would be appropriate to compel the working group to discuss that document at this time, but rather have it come up in the natural course of discussions when we get to the relevant issues. Is that helpful?
Not entirely. So you're saying that there won't be a discussion on the content of the statement until we get to the point where we're talking about those overarching issues in question about the URS providers?
Well, that's our current intent. But if you're think there's a flaw in that, why don't you post something on the email list and we can get into it? I don't think we want to start a review of those suggested approach on this call.
Phil, this is Brian. I'm sorry, I'm on audio only. Could I make a comment and follow up?
Who's this?
Brian Beckham.
Yeah, go ahead, Brian. There's some others with hands up, but it sounds like you're in transit, so go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Just to dovetail on what Susan said, one suggestion might be whether it's the co-chairs collectively or individually, and I appreciate the discussion and the explanation from J. Scott earlier about the relation of the new approach and vis-a-vis the charter questions, but I think I kind of share the same question of Susan, which is why not let's just loop them into the charter questions or the discussion document now, and then they're there, and when we get to discussing them, we can discuss them, but let's just get them on the table now.
Well, Brian, what I just heard you say was what I was trying to say. So I'm not sure where that leaves this particular discussion. I see both my co-chairs have their hands up, and Susan has re-raised her hand. So I'm going to call on Jay Scott first, then Kathy, then Susan. Mary, did you have a relevant staff comment on this right now, or can your can it wait till we let the participants speak?
It can wait, Phil. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mary. So, Jay Scott, go ahead, then Kathy after you, and then Susan again.
Again, to Brian and Susan's concerns, I do believe that there will be from a personal perspective, was on the 20th, we're going to consider whether the approach that was discussed on November 30th is, or the 29th, perhaps it was, is an appropriate approach. Then the second, if that is consensus, then the second issue would be, have we used the charter questions, the questions that are presented in our charter, and have we identified the necessary areas that are relevant? And in that discussion, when that discussion occurs, that would be an appropriate time to consider the memo and whether those questions should be added or not. Whether those topics should be added or not, and then these templatized questions approached against them. In the event that the group decides they don't want to go with the new approach, then I think when we discuss the charter questions and refining the charter questions and have that discussion, should that be the path we take, then we would discuss that memo in that discussion. So before anything gets cemented as an area that we will cover, there will be a discussion about what's in that memo, whether people agree that these topics should be considered, no matter what method we go about. Okay? No matter what which path we go, there will be a separate consideration of whether the points raised in the memo should be included in the discussion of the URS. That's my perspective.
Okay, thank you, Jay Scott. I'm going to call on Kathy, and then Susan's back behind her, and I'm going to note it's 14 after the hour, so our promises of a short call have not been realized, but let's finish up this discussion. Kathy, go ahead.
Terrific. Kathy Kleiman. And I just wanted to add to what Phil and Jay Scott said, that in the new document staff will be circulating, everything's going to be all together. Either that or we'll be circulating three separate documents altogether. But so all the material is going to be together, the charter questions, the new version of the questions, as well as the co-chair statement. So everything's on the table right now. Thank you.
Okay, and thank you, Kathy. Susan?
Hi, thanks for that. I did put my hand down because I was putting in the chat that I think this would benefit from some airing on the email list, but I'm afraid I put it back up because I don't agree with that last proposal from Kathy, I'm afraid. I'm not particularly comfortable with this co-chair's statement, and so I'm not particularly comfortable with certainly some of those bullets ending up in some kind of consolidated document that has the appearance of being, you know, the document on the record. We haven't talked about this at all. It's just come from the three co-chairs. And as a group, we haven't agreed it. And I don't think it should make its way into some consolidated document unless we've agreed that that's the path forward.
Well, Susan, the consolidated document contains an issue approach, which has also not been agreed to by the group. So nothing in that document has been adopted by the working group. Everything's provisional, including the co-chair's suggestion. It's just to have everything out there for working group, so there's one single document the working group can refer to when it gets into deciding how it wants to approach the URS and what inquiries it wants to make. So I think the co-chairs have been clear that the fact that we've put that out as a suggestion in no way indicates that the working group is bound to go down that path. It's simply to get it out for discussion. And I should add that this is a good time for any working group members who believe there's any issue that is important for our U.S. review work and is not in the charter questions or out there yet to get it out so the working group can consider that as well.
Okay, so I think this document then needs an enormous caveat right across it so that everyone's clear on its status. Thanks.
Okay. Mary, you've been very patient. Please go ahead, and then we'll look to wrap up this call.
Thank you, Fern. Thank you, everyone. So just on that last point, that is the staff understanding that we're going to put out a single document, but it is a single document for ease of reference only, and that is basically a draft document on the understanding that neither the approach nor the co-chair's statement and suggestions have been reviewed or discussed by the working group. The point that I did want to make, Phil and everybody, was in respect to the next two calls, especially the last call for the year. So just to recap that for next week, the 13th, we will have Doug Eisenberg and John Berryhill join us as guest speakers. We'll be going through the URS rules and getting Doug and John's comments and input on their experiences with this procedure as representing various parties through it. And, of course, they will be taking questions from the group as well. That leaves the 20th as the last call for this calendar year, and that's our understanding is that will be where the document that combines the three documents as drafts can be discussed. Our question is something that George raised in the chat earlier, that technically this call on the 20th will be the last call of the year, so typically that would have been at the APAC-friendly time zone. However, understanding after discussion with the co-chairs is that this call on the 20th will actually be scheduled for the regular time, which is this current time of 1800 UTC. And if that's the case, then we will go ahead and make that one change, because at the moment, since the calendaring was done in advance, at the moment it still stands as an APAC-friendly call. So that was the question, Phil, and also to try to recap where we are and what we're going to be doing for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, and thank you. And Mary, as far as the timing of the 20th call, the time of day, I had mentioned that before, that we're going to hold it at the regular time to maximize participation in terms of total number of participants. So going once, going twice, any further comments or questions before we bid adieu to this meeting? I see and hear nothing, so thank you for your participation, and we look forward to an interesting presentation by URS Council on our next call. Have a good week. Bye.
Same.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Phil. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, everyone. Today's meeting is adjourned. Operator, can you please stop the recording? Everyone have a good rest of your day.